breaks out, nothing but silence. From the mainstream media show, we want to know about nonviolence. Where do we go? Nonviolence Radio. Tell your friend, tell your foe.
Ooh, nonviolence.
Challenging
radio.
Silence.
Nonviolence.
Challenging
radio.
Silence.
Ooh, nonviolence radio.
Challenging silence.
Greetings, everyone, and thank you for joining me in this challenge to silence. As usual, I'm going to give you resources, news, and events, but as a little bit different, I'm going to choose some selected items in all of these three categories because they're very thought-provoking and lead to a lot of reflection. So the first thing I'd like to mention in this resource area, in addition to the resources we were just hearing about from Matt Powers, is Waging Nonviolence, which always seems to come up with something useful. And George Lakey seems to have something new to share with us every couple of weeks. He's now posted a manual for a new era of direct action. That was on July 28th. And this is 50 years on from his creating a famous manual with Daniel Hunter. And that struck me because I used to complain rather bitterly that there was no connection, there was no continuity in the nonviolence world. Every event was happening in isolation, and we didn't have the habit of learning from best practices, learning from our mistakes, and growing. And that was in sharp contrast to military culture, which studied minutely every single battle. Of course, the difference being that they couldn't learn the big lessons. We can learn the big lessons, but weren't able to learn the smaller ones about how to grow this thing, to put it that way. But that has changed, and this is an example of that change. So every paragraph in this short article of George Lakey's links to specific resources so that you can continue the study. And I think this is something that may become indispensable, especially for newer activists, of which there are so many now getting into the field. And George lists about 12 key points that you can look out for, and I'm going to talk about a few of them. One of them, the first one, he calls Name This Political Moment. And I think what he means there is understand the dynamics of the situation that you are in. And it reminded me that Kenneth Boulding, who was a famous peace researcher, passed away in the 80s. He talked about the huge debates toward the beginning of World War I, well, in the 30s, actually, which actually was kind of a debate about images, about stories. Where are we? I'm sorry, I must be talking about a slightly later period. I'm very bad at time. Where are we today? Which model applies? Is it the disastrous mistake that led up to World War I, which was the mistake of rushing into armaments, or the disastrous mistake that led up to World War II, which was appeasement? These are kind of opposite lessons, and we didn't know which image to apply in the days of the Cold War. And that's just so extremely important. I know in my own experience, I lived through and worked in the free speech movement at Berkeley, and shortly after the free speech movement, about a year later, there was something called FSM2, which really stood for the filthy speech movement. And the mistake there was people were just trying to imitate the technique of the free speech movement without realizing that they didn't have the same issue and they weren't, the time had moved on. They were not in the same ballgame. So, Name This Political Moment, I think, is a very good piece of advice. George Lakey also says, be aware of the need for a larger vision. The need for a larger vision. I think without that contextualization, it's very difficult for us to make that decision about where are we and what need we to do. And sure enough, he comes back to it with a little bit of variation at the end when he says, the big picture will continue to influence your chances for success. I think one of the unfortunate things about contemporary culture here in the industrialized world is we are never encouraged to think about the big picture. So we just keep on trying to understand where we are based on certain details. Oh, my classic example. Every time a murder is reported, what do you hear about? What millimeter gun was it? What was the motive? Meaning, you know, what was the particular thing that triggered that particular person? Never are we encouraged to step back and say, why is violence increasing? What is violence? And how can we stop it? So he also encourages us that our organizational culture matters for short-run success and for the movement's wider goals. He explains that we need to choose our issue, and the issue needs to be one that people care a lot about, and this is something that I've been saying all the time, has something about it you can win on. In other words, if you go and decide you're going to have a hunger strike in order to end the Cold War, you can't possibly win on that, for various reasons, of course. So it's quite important at the beginning of a campaign, and George Lakey talks about building from events to campaigns to movements. At the beginning of a campaign, it's often crucially important to do something that you can succeed at. That shows you and your constituents that success is possible. And then you can go forward from there, even if not every action is met with success, knowing that it is possible you have the strength to do it. Now, this contrasts a little bit with a deep principle in nonviolence that we talk about. It's called work versus work, because we always say the big difference between violence and nonviolence is that in violence, you sometimes succeed in the outside world, though that actually is becoming very rare, but you never succeed in the inside world. That is to say, you never make the situation better. You never you have kicked the can down the road, if you haven't stumbled over it, but you haven't fixed the problem. Whereas in nonviolence, even if you don't succeed, if you don't win, quote unquote, in the given situation, you've done something that changes the situation for the better and will make things easier down the road. Recent example that we loved, quote, turned up by Erica Chenoweth and Maria Stefan. They studied a nonviolent versus violent insurrections to see which of them had more democracy 5 years down the road. Not surprisingly, the nonviolent ones led to greater democracy, four times greater. But surprisingly, they led to greater democracy even if they failed, whereas violent overthrows did not lead to more democracy even if they succeeded. And of course, this is exactly what we're seeing in Egypt and elsewhere. Well, okay, let me calm down a little bit here and look at something a little bit closer to home, or at least a little bit out east from here in West Marin. I want to share with you the Occupy Sonoma County Earth Action Campaign, which is being very active. They have a listserv that you can click on to join. Actually, I clicked on it and it didn't work, but I think they'll straighten that out. And they're using the list for sharing climate change, climate justice, GMO issues, toxic chemicals, earth-related news, and Earth Action Campaign information. So have a look at Occupy Sonoma County Earth Action Campaign. And this leads me to a book that is a collection of interviews that took place over a period of time by C.J. Polychroniou. That's how his name would be pronounced in Greek anyway. I don't know how he pronounces it in this country. But it's interviews that he carried on for a long time with Noam Chomsky. And the book is called Optimism Over Despair: Noam Chomsky on Capitalism, Empire, and Social Change. And that book is now available through a donation to Truth Out. You can get that book for a donation to Truth Out, which we often rely on for this news, incidentally. And Truth Out has an excerpt from the book, and it leads to something I wanted to comment on. The question that's asked toward the end of this excerpt is why, in the face of these obvious pushbacks that we're getting from our government, why are Americans so compliant? Why are we putting up with offenses to our health care, our social fabric, our dignity as human beings, etc.? And I thought that the answers that Noam Chomsky came up with were not entirely satisfying for me. For me, the issue is kind of simple to frame. In our nature, there are two forces. You may have heard that story about the Native American grandfather telling his grandson, "I have two wolves inside me, son, and they're fighting. One of them is a fierce animal and the other is a gentle animal." The boy says, "Good heavens, grandfather, which one will win?" And he says, very sagely, "The one that I feed." So we all have these two forces inside of us. But which one will be expressed in action depends on the one that we feed, and that is a question of our culture. Our culture right now is mainly crafted by the mass media. And if you look at it from any kind of perspective, you will have to agree with a colleague of mine at Berkeley who said, we are increasing violence by every means possible. So because of that demoralization of the human image, that constant drive toward compliance, Amy Goodman in Democracy Now! Recently pointed out that where there were 80 hours of coverage for the man who is now president, leading up to that campaign at that same period of time, there were 20 seconds allocated to Bernie Sanders. So the push is always towards mainstreaming, towards more safe seeming candidates, towards reactionism, actually, and we are not given the sense that we have any capacity to choose. And that's partly done on the political level. I remember watching a presidential campaign recently, a campaign debate, I mean, and at the end of the debate, I happened to see this on television, somebody came out and said, "We'll have the results for you in a moment." Well, I thought the point of the debate is for me to make up my mind, not to listen to some expert telling me who won. So this is partly being done on the political level, but I think it's also partly being done on the level of the commercials and the entertainment media, which are constantly telling us that we have no capacities within us, that we have to rely on the outside world. So I'm still up on my soapbox, people. I hope that you don't mind. ICNC, International Center for Nonviolent Conflict. I've talked almost every program now about their Minds of the Movement blog because it's so well chosen. And it seemed like it was particularly rich this week. They had articles on the umbrella movement in Hong Kong that took place back in 2014. They had an article on the importance of media coverage for our movements by Deborah Mattis, who is the co-editor of Minds. They had articles on Papua New Guinea and the United States. And I want to particularly draw your attention to one by Jack Duvall called "Why Violence Undermines Protest." And Jack writes, "Every nonviolent movement is a commitment to living in freedom and justice once power is shared fairly by everyone. Violent action sabotages that commitment because turmoil in the streets will be quelled by repression." So I just want to enlarge a little bit on that final comment, because Erica Chenoweth, in her studies that she's been doing on, that's called technically the violent flank or the radical flank, the idea of coming in and saying we need, by whatever means necessary, diversity of tactics, and you start breaking windows and so forth, as happened at Berkeley a few months ago. She shows that that doesn't work. It tends to degrade the power of a movement. And her reason, her explanation is that you lose participants, you lose followers because they're afraid. I might add, they don't like violence. They have an innate aversion to it, and so they back away. So that's one practical reason. And now Jack has given another practical reason, that it invites repression. In fact, if you saw the film on Martin Luther King that we all recently saw, Selma, the argument in there that's given by one of King's followers is, if we kill a couple of policemen, as somebody suggested, they will kill 10 of us. Now, I'm not disputing the truth of that for a moment, but I'm a little bit worried that it might cover over a deeper reason and a more powerful and long-lasting dynamic, which is very important for us always to keep in mind. This is my version of what George Leakey meant by the big picture. And that is, how am I going to put this now? The spiritual coherence of your message, which is what Jack Duvall was alluding to in the first part of his answer. Another way to look at it is, this is a question of the coherence between means and ends. If you want a solution of fairness, of justice, you are in the domain of human unity and nonviolence. And if you use disruptive, offensive, humiliating tactics to get there, those are in the domain of violence. So you're feeding the wrong wolf while trying to create a home for the correct wolf, for the wolf of peace. I hope I've made that clear, that there's a very deep reason why a violent tactic is disruptive to a nonviolent action around protest.
Michael, that reminds me a bit of our guest Matt Powers in the previous segment when we were talking about permaculture. It'd be like using Roundup and Monsanto on your permaculture garden to stop a few weeds. You ruin the whole picture if that's how you handle aspects of a garden. Yep. That you're working on from a regenerative perspective. We want our movements to be regenerative. So even a little bit of violence quells that regeneration and puts us back into a state of fighting against each other.
Good example, Stephanie. And I'd throw in another one. When they come to bulldoze your garden, what are you going to do about it? If you throw rocks at them, if you hurl curses at them, you're again being dissonant. You're compromising the integrity of your message. If you stand there and say, okay, if you push that bulldozer through the fence, you're going to hit me, which, you know, I'm not recommending. I would hope we don't have to get into that drastic state. But if you say, I'm going to display the fact that you're hurting me, and under no circumstances will I try to hurt you, there's a tremendous coherence, and the inherent nonviolence of the garden can be brought out. So that's a really good way of thinking about it. Well, I'm going to skip over some more of my resources. I hope that we might be able to share them on our website. But to move into the news section, there is an episode going on right now in Richmond, California, which is gate blocking at the plant of Kinder Morgan. And this is part of a much larger picture where indigenous people have been fighting back against corporate ruining of their lands and their livelihoods. Penny Opal Plant of Idle No More San Francisco Bay. You're familiar with Idle No More. It's a political movement of Native Americans. She recently stated, in connection with this gate blocking, our First Nations relatives are not going to allow the Trans Mountain Pipeline to go through their territories in Canada. Investing in any fossil fuel infrastructure is foolish. We all know that we must transition off fossil fuels in order to prevent catastrophic climate change. Why waste so many resources on a losing proposition? Very articulate, very well done. Well, Kinder Morgan is now experiencing a resistance from over 140 tribes who have constituted the Tribal Alliance Against Tar Sands Expansion. because that's the issue here. They're going to be getting a lot of oil out of tar sands up in Canada and bringing it down to this shipping point in Richmond. So this is an alliance which is really groundbreaking of indigenous nations who are opposed to all tar sands pipelines crossing their traditional lands and waters. And they have had some successes. The recently elected government of British Columbia also opposes this project. Now, this is clearly just the beginning, said Patrick McCulley of RAN, Rainforest Action Network. Second week in a row that activists are blockading this facility, and you can expect protests up and down the West Coast as banks and oil companies continue to try to profit from climate chaos and human rights violations. So they're doing a bit here of what George Lakey had called operating on the puppeteers and not the puppets. The puppeteers are the banks who make possible these, in his case, it was primarily mountaintop removal. Going after the politicians, he said, we'd be wasting your time because they're really just puppets, tools of the people who are bankrolling them. Well, we have talked about a fascinating movement that now has a name. It's called municipalism. And it's the idea that city governments are picking up the baton, which have been dropped by the larger governmental entities. And where this is particularly effective right now is in Spain, where cities are rising up to furnish alternative to the corruption of the mainstream parties. Started in Barcelona and spread to many other cities, Valencia, Ibiza, where I spent the summer. And it's now spreading across Europe. And, of course, it has smatterings in New York. And where it's really big is in India, because the government is so unable to deal with issues there for various reasons.
Thank you so much, Michael Negler, for this episode of Nonviolence Radio within our nonviolence news in this episode of Nonviolence Radio. If people want to know more, they can go to metacenter.org and find the transcript of today's news broadcast and find links and all that. We want to thank our guest, Matt Powers, of the permaculturestudent.com for inspiring us that there is hope in time of climate change, and there's ways of understanding human relationships that are regenerative and work with the earth. And this is all nonviolence in action. We hope that we've shown you that nonviolence is more than just protest. If we've done so, we've done our job today. And thank you so much to our mother station, KWMR, to the Meta Center for Nonviolence, and all of our staff, volunteers, and you, the listeners. Until the next time, take care of one another. Goodbye.
The Cave Paradise put up a parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? The Cave Paradise put up a parking lot.
Ooh, bah, 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 bah.
Trees, put them in a tree museum, and they charge the people $1.50 just to see them. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. Hey, farmer, farmer, put away the DDT now. Spots on apples, but leave me the birds and the bees. Please, don't it always seem to go that you don't